please welcome my next guest, Ethan Becker. Ethan is a visual development artist in animation who worked with clients such as DreamWorks, Warner Brothers, Studio Mir, to name a few. Ethan is also known for his incredibly popular and funny YouTube channel, and probably one of the most interesting personalities I've had a chance to talk with. Hope you're gonna enjoy this episode. Let's go.
Videos.
So did you click on that video because it looked like I was an asshole?
Yeah. Actually, yes. Yes.
Did you leave that video still thinking that I was an asshole?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, dang it. I feel like
do
I
you,
could
do you get
be
that? Is that your shtick? Like, you want to be an asshole?
I want to be American, you know, and whatever comes with that.
Yeah. America, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm learning about the culture. I'm actually enjoying it. But no, when I watched that video, like the way you set it up is perfect, because like you make it look like you're a fucking asshole, and it's not clickbaity either, because you kind of like, you know, play that role in the video a little bit in my estimate, but like. You have to be at least a little bit of smart, like smart enough to understand the sarcasm in a way.
Have you seen those comments where people are like, they just don't understand it? There's a lot of people that just don't understand it.
Yeah. Why you read comments in the first place? You know,
I know. Yeah. I need to stop doing that. I have stopped doing that.
Yeah. I stopped reading comments a long time ago. I read some of them, right? I just go through like, oh, if someone says something interesting, but it's more like just picking the good stuff. And if someone's asking like a legit question, you just answer it. But if someone's just hating, it's like, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
They don't understand. Oh, I don't care. That's usually how I approach it. So what got you to do the YouTube? Let's start with that. Like, why did you even start? Because it's not an easy thing to do.
The YouTube
channel, yeah.
Yeah. Well, honestly, I just found, like, what's the most manipulative tool that I can master? And, you know, that's like, it's video, you know, it's video and talking. And then mainly what I'm trying to do is make a microcosm of a, like a small TV show or a production or something. And I'm kind of using the YouTube to kind of learn how to do that, essentially. Can I ask you as well, like, why you started doing stuff?
Just go back and forth, man. Like, if you want to interview me, that's fine too. You know, like, this is not really an interview. It's more like a conversation. I'm trying to get to know you as well as we talk, because we never spoke, really.
Yeah, I've never seen you before in my life. Only seen your work.
Yeah, I don't know who the fuck you are either. So, but yeah, just do ask away, man.
Yeah, I mean, okay. So I use it to manipulate people. What do you use YouTube for?
Oh, well, I don't do a YouTube channel. Like, I don't have a YouTube channel. I do have a podcast, and it just happens that it's on the YouTube.
Yeah.
I guess it's just the best way to reach out to the most people right now. Cause, I do have the podcast on iTunes and SoundCloud and, Spotify, all those places. Right. But I don't know, YouTube is by far the biggest audience. And to me, it all started with, I remember doing like live streams with Dan Luvisi, Anthony Jones, and a bunch of other friends back then. And I had a podcast with Ash Thorpe, He has a podcast collective, and we did that, and that kind of sparked like this whole like the combination of it all kind of sparked the idea. You know, I've kind of learned from the industry. Why not just giving it back a little bit? You know, have that conversation, and it's also a vehicle just to get to know more people and talk with them, meet them, all that kind of stuff. So it's it can be exhausting. It can be interesting, and it can be, you know, I had few episodes I recorded I never released up in like mutual agreement, like this just didn't go well.
Oh really?
yeah and it's usually, how to put it correctly, it's usually like a mutual thing. It's not and it's not like, oh, I did not like or jive with you. It was just like, yeah, you know, it was kind of like, yeah, not worth after all, you know. Because sometimes, like we've talked about it before we started, sometimes you just talk to people and you just do not connect, and the conversation feels like fucking dry. It's just like you're asking a question, they give you yes, and then they ask you a question, you're like, wait, what are you asking?
Yeah. Well, sometimes I can definitely understand this, is sometimes you just get nervous. You really, really get nervous in front of a camera. And that was kind of one of the reasons I started the hashtag YouTube, was because like I couldn't present myself. And it's still kind of difficult. Right now it's kind of difficult for me to like, you know, I get stage fright and stuff like that, or I used to.
Right.
And I'm thinking, well, if I'm going to do my own productions, if I'm going to be able to, if I'm going to talk to people, have to talk to people in the future, then, you know, other studios or whatever, then I need to be able to freaking talk. I need to be able to present stuff. And a lot of that is like a big fear of me feeling like I don't want to make a fool of myself, and it's permanent because everything online is permanent. So
whatever you say stays there, no matter how hard you're gonna try to write it.
And so to get over that, you know, I just kind of had to make a fool of myself, and that entails being overtly American and just being a complete jackass, you know, as much as possible. So that was kind of, in a way, me trying to just be like, you know, I'm holding like this glass of water, and I'm trying everything I can do to not spill it. And then instead of me trying to hold on so tight, I just drop it and let it crash and be like, all right, now I have nothing to fear, essentially. Got so that's, and that's a way for me to do that as well. And I understand why they would be,
Go ahead.
They'd be nervous, you know, like, did you ever get any of that fear or, doing podcasts or anything?
Oh, I get it all the time. You know, it's kind of funny because almost every episode I record, I'm like nervous for whatever reason. I've done it like 100 something episodes already.
Yeah.
And when you watch the first ever thing I've ever recorded, it's like, wow, this is so wacky. Mm-hmm. And then somewhere down the road, I've kind of learned how to have a conversation with people. I got enough comments about interrupting and talking about myself that, you know, I'm like super aware, like self-aware about that as well, which was like pretty valid. Like listening to some of the episodes I've done before, it's like, holy fuck, I'm like a jackass, you know, like not letting people talk. But this is like, you know, with art, you take baby steps to get somewhere. Like you're not going to be Craig Mullins right from the get-go. I feel like the art of podcasting, unless it's like in your nature, unless you have like a personality for it, it's a very difficult thing to do, to have a conversation and listen to. I mean, for everyone, like look at what's happening right now. Like barely anyone talks to anyone, you know?
Yeah.
So it's very difficult to have a conversation where you actually do have a conversation and exchange ideas and, you know, and maybe change your own idea or something. People are just very tribal in general. So it is a form of, you know, a learning process. Let's put it this way.
Yeah.
Takes a bit of time, and, I'm nervous all the time. I mean, it's, if you're not, then if I wasn't, then I don't think that would tell me that maybe I'm not caring enough in a way.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's how I've been approaching pretty much everything. Like anytime And I it'll be a question to you, like, you know, you probably know that feeling when you are about to start like a really important project, right? Let's say you're working for your dream client, or it's a big, big show or a big project that has a lot of weight behind it. And you know, you cannot fuck it up, you know?
Yeah.
You have that too. Mm-hmm. And I feel like when I get those projects, I feel the same when I get those projects and when I'm doing the podcast as well, almost.
Yeah, that makes sense. It all applies.
Yeah, it does. I remember being at THU in 2017, and I did a panel. I did a talk. It was called Climb Your Own Mountain. Mm. And I remember walking on the stage, and when you listen, you can probably still watch it on THU website if you're a subscriber or something. But I remember the first 5 minutes, my voice was so fucking shaky. Mm-hmm. I was just so nervous. And then eventually it kind of went away. But
yeah, I blank out. I definitely like zone out. Yeah. It helps to chew gum, you know. Last time, the one and only time that I've done a public thing, I just had to have that gum. It just gave me something to do, you know.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I feel like chewing gum is... I don't know, like it's like eating during when you're talking on the podcast.
It's absolutely rude, but thank God that my, you know, character is such a jackass, so I can do that. It's okay.
So did you start your your channel before you went into the entertainment industry or after?
After. Maybe like 4 or 5 years after. Yeah.
Okay. What actually got you into the industry? Was it like, well, did you know you're going to be an artist? Like, did you have, was your, my grand plan is to be fucking illustrator for DreamWorks and whatever?
You know, there's a huge concept art craze, like maybe 6 or 7 years ago when, I mean, I'm not sure about you, but at the time it blew up on the internet and concept art was this huge thing. A lot of ZHC, God dang it. I can't remember his name, Fengzhu, you know, Fengzhu.
Yeah,
he had a lot of tutorials, and I would come home from school and watch those every day. I'd watch every single episode like twice, and he has hundreds of them.
Yeah,
but that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to do concept art. So the only place that you could do it was, and I knew online was kind of a risky thing. You want to try to do these things in person, and all the classes and stuff were in Los Angeles. Do you live in Los Angeles right now?
I moved out. Yeah. I used to live there for almost 10 years.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I'm still in California, but moved out to like more suburban rural areas, Orange County.
Oh, okay. You're in Orange County?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. That's pretty close.
Much nicer.
Yeah. But I went to CDA in Pasadena. So that's pretty much it. It's like, when I got there, there was a lot of concept art, and I didn't really understand that you could do, you know, stuff like Ghibli or Miyazaki, and even Disney, you know, has some amazing projects. And
right.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what got me into it.
So did you move to Los Angeles?
Yeah.
To study or was, were like, did you grow up in California or?
I grew up in Texas, Southeast Texas.
Okay.
You know, a lot of horse riding and rodeos and stuff like that.
Seems like everyone's moving to Texas now.
Yeah. Maybe at some point I'll have to move back. But
yeah, I've never been to Texas. I have friends that used to live in Austin, and they said like it's super nice down there. I trust them.
It's pretty gosh darn nice. I mean, it's so big, you know, you're going to get horrible sections and beautiful sections.
Yeah,
I grew up in the swamp, essentially. So don't go there. Don't go there.
Don't go to the swamps. A lot
of tire fires and stuff like that. You don't want to get in the middle of that.
Got it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Pasadena makes sense. You have CDA, you have Art Center, you have... where right now we have Brainstorm as well. So yeah, a lot of places.
Yeah. I spent a lot of time at Art Center. I was sneaking in for like 2 years, I would sneak in and do life drawing, you know, and like not pay for it. And then after those 2 years, I realized that it was all free and they didn't really care whether or not, you know, yeah. So I thought that was,
got it.
That was pretty, pretty cool.
Was there anything in particular that made you interested in art, or like, you know, I was talking with Gio Napkill, Napkill. Jesus Christ. Remembering names is pretty horrible. But like for him was like, I watched Star Wars. I watched, you know, Ghost in the Shell, and I watched Jurassic Park, and damn, like for me, ILM became like this sort of mecca I need to go to, you know? And yeah. So he would do everything to make it happen. I wonder if there was anything like that for you.
Definitely, yeah. A lot of Miyazaki, you know, Princess Mononoke was, would take the, there's the old screens, the old TVs, the huge box TVs with my VHS of Princess Mononoke, and I would lean the screen back, you know, and put paper over it to try to trace over the, yeah, it was a lot of that. And FLCL, I remember the first time I saw FLCL, it completely blew my mind, and I stayed up like all night watching the whole series. It was
right,
pretty sick. Yeah,
yeah. So entertainment inspiration basically
got absolutely you into it.
Did you discover like what do you need to do like right away, or what was it?
Oh, to get into the industry?
Yeah.
No, like I was going in for concept design, and then all the classes ran out for concept design, and they're like, hey, you want to take this visual development for animation? I was like, animation? I'm thinking like Barney and you know, Polly Pocket, whatever. And I'm like, no, I don't want to do that baby stuff. But then I started looking into the work, and I was like, okay, I think if you can do viz dev, then you can go to concept art.
Yeah.
But if you go to concept art, you can't go to viz dev. I mean, it would take longer, it feels like, because viz dev focuses on certain types of fundamentals that I feel like I wouldn't learn in concept art. But you're concept art more driven, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm like all over the place right now.
Yeah. You agree with that statement?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny because up until I got to Naughty Dog, I never considered myself like concept artist. I was like more of an illustrator. I have better understanding of rendering and just making images look cool than coming up with like original ideas. And, you know, that's disputable. Obviously, it's like subjective, but subjectively, I felt that about myself. And then once I got to Naughty Dog, and later down the road, I kind of discovered like, okay, I do actually have ideas that are kind of fresh and interesting. And obviously, it's a subjective thing because like, as with everything, unless you are an absolute outlier, for the most part, everything you do has already been done in a way, you know? Yeah. So it's usually just your own take on subject matters. But yeah, I mean, for the most part, I guess the last decade was more of a concept art. Now it's kind of turning towards creative direction, directing and that kind of stuff. I don't know where this is going to go, obviously, but I did have my, you know, I've released my short film shortly after. I just finished working on the big project that I directed as well. So it's like, it's moving towards where I want it to move towards, but yeah, I don't know. It's, I guess, artist or a creative person. I don't know. Like those words stopped having any meaning to me like quite a while ago. And I think it's because I think the turning point was moving to Naughty Dog, because at Naughty Dog, when I started working there, like their structure of the company was always that everyone is quote like more or less equal. Like if you have a good idea, you have a good idea, no matter if you're junior or senior. They don't even have a junior or senior distinction between, like, if you're a concept artist, you're a concept artist, you know. They do have leads, and but those are mostly for like organizing teams rather than I am the lead, therefore bow.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously I don't know how it is now. I moved from Naughty Dog in 2014, so that's been like almost 6 years since I worked there. So a lot of things could have changed. I don't know. But I remember when I, because I was like, I moved there like, am I a senior? Am I a junior? Who am I? You know, I was like, no, we don't care. Like, you're just, you know, you're just doing your thing. Like, oh shit, okay. And then looked back at, you know, working at other companies and like how much ego is attached to a title.
Yeah.
And like, oh, I'm a lead artist, therefore listen to me. And it's like, ah, yeah, but your ideas kind of suck, you know, like what the fuck? Yeah. What are we going to do about that? You know?
Yeah.
And I feel like having a title, like specific title, never meant anything for my work. Like, I've never had anyone reach out to me as like, oh, you're a lead artist or a lead concept artist. You must be good. You know, like, it was like, no, we saw your work. It's fucking awesome. Let's go. You know?
Yeah. You prefer freelance or being a part of these? Okay.
I guess, you know, the only part that I miss sometimes is like when you work on the project for a long time.
Yeah.
Then you can kind of chill and then do your own work in the meantime and focus on that a little more. Cause like if you're on a long-term project, obviously you're putting your effort in, but you're not worrying about what's going to be after. Right. So you don't have to think about by the time the project ends, who's going to be my next client? How am I going to organize contracts and paperwork? You know, conversations, schedules, like all those things kind of drain you.
Yeah.
If you don't have any like business orientation or you know this is important, and especially if you're like super obsessed about just making awesome shit all the time, then, you know, it kind of becomes like a chore.
Yeah.
It drains you basically. You're always like worrying, okay, what's next? And sometimes you get like six offers at the same time and like, fuck, which one I choose? And that by itself, like the abundance of choice sometimes is bad. But then you have moments where there's no offers because, you know, maybe that part of the year is a little dry or something. And then you're like, okay, well, what are we going to do now? You know, you have those. I never run into problems like that, luckily, so far.
Yeah,
but I know I have friends that have that issue all the time, you know?
I do. So. I wondered this about you. This is kind of, well, I'm just wondering, like, do you use 3D in your work mainly now? Or is it, do you like, what do you use exactly? Photoshop or what?
No, man. Magic.
It's all just magic?
Yeah, just like fucking hocus pocus, dude.
Yeah, okay.
Nah, it's a mix. It's all tools, you know?
Yeah.
Like some of my personal art is just drawing at this point. You know, some of the Showtime that I've done was like some of the illustrations were just drawings, while the others were, you know, almost half of it or 75% 3D. So it's like difficult to say. I usually don't look at whether it's 3D or drawing at all. I look where the final, what's the final going to look like, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, I've been following your work for so long, and this stuff recently is so flipping awesome. The short that you did, or was it the video that you uploaded?
Yeah.
I love that so much.
Thanks, man. It was a lot of work. Once you get stuff moving, it's just fuck. Yeah.
So is this a personal, just purely personal project that you're?
Yeah, it's all personal. You know, it's funny. That's a question to you. Like, how much personal work you do? Compared to like, I mean, obviously everything you do for YouTube is personal, right?
Yeah.
And so that's a lot of work just by itself. And I'm not sure. I saw like you're uploading quite frequently. I don't know if it's a weekly upload or whatever, but
it was,
but you have a bunch of videos there and quite a large following too. I know like people think that this stuff is easy to make, but the amount of editing, like the recording is probably just a tiny bit, and then everything else is the work.
It really is. The editing is what makes it. I mean, yeah. As a filmmaker, that's pretty much it. You can shoot whatever you want, but the editing is where it's at.
Yeah.
Oh man, it drains me thinking about it. I literally just stopped. I was shooting a video every week, and I was shooting a video every week, and I was editing a video every week, even with the help of editors. And I would upload it, and by the time that sucker was ready, I had pretty much no time to be like to chill. It's like, all right, now I got to get the next one going for next week. And I was waking up like with my shoulders bunched and like my teeth were grinding, and I was like, oh, this is not good. And so I just stopped. I stopped for like a month, and I was actually about to shoot another one today. Or I'm writing a script for one, trying to just do some outlines. Mm-hmm. But I didn't realize it, but I looked at the time schedule for the videos that I freaking shoot, and it's a production. It's like,
yeah,
it is one day of prep, one day of shooting, and maybe 3 days of editing, and then another day of editing.
Your week.
Yeah, and there's another day of like final editing, and yeah, and that's
posting,
it's a whole week
and marketing and yeah social it's media.
It's a whole flipping week, and on top of that, I have to do storyboards for the company that you know that I'm working for the projects that I'm doing, and storyboards, no joke. Like yeah. you gotta be on that, and that takes the whole. I should have been doing that, you know, during the week.
Right.
And then on top of that, if I want to do any personal work, there's literally no time to do it. So, and on top of that, I mean, if I want to have a life, then maybe I want to spend time with my dog and my fiance. I mean, that's a little bit out of the question, but maybe let's say I do want to do that. Let's say I do want to spend time with my fiance or maybe use a bathroom or eat or something like
that.
Yeah,
but your audience don't care. Where's the video?
Yeah. But so I got to sacrifice something, you know, and I think.
Yeah.
Taking a periodic break, like put out a bunch of videos and then just kind of chill, take a break, put out a bunch of videos. I think that's probably what's I'm going to have to do.
Do you queue up? Like, let's say you record a bunch of videos up front. So that you have, you know, almost like I'm going to crunch for a month, but then I have 2 months of work done. Then I can figure out what's next. Or
yeah.
Do you just go by motions?
So what happens with that is I do stockpile maybe like 4 or 5 videos and then yeah. I release them periodically. And then once that trend starts to go up, then I'll be like, all right, am I going to chill or am I going to try to put out another video this week? And also while I'm doing that, while I'm building these videos, something like Inktober will happen. Did you see the Inktober situation?
Yeah, I actually watched your video about it. It's like,
okay. Well, something like that'll happen. It's like what do you call it, topical? It's like something yeah. that's trending currently. So it's like, all right, well, I have an opinion over this and I feel like I could do some good. So all production stops. This whole week is dedicated to this video. Right. And that means everything.
You did a little TMZ treatment to that.
yeah. So yeah. If I see potential in that, then that's what I'll do. But otherwise, like, man, it's a lot. It is a lot. Cause at the same time I'm doing like a mentorship right now with a writer. He's the mentor. He's like a Hollywood writer and right. He's teaching me how to do screenwriting and all that type of stuff. So mainly it's formatting and how to build story,
right.
You know, properly and stuff. So that's what I've been doing as well. And that takes a lot of time.
So working for company, learning new skills, producing, storyboarding, editing, and marketing.
No time for drawing anymore. Honestly, storyboarding for me is like, it's like 20% drawing. Like I don't draw anymore. It's setting up camera movements. It's setting up layer movements. You know, moving a car around, moving layer, like it's not even drawing faces anymore as much. Mm. But anyway, that's me complaining about everything. To overall, though, overall, I freaking love it. I love everything about it. It's like, that. This is why I do it, because I enjoy telling stories. I enjoy doing this. It's not bad. It's a great thing. It's a great problem to have.
Do you feel like YouTube, what are you doing with YouTube, the videos you're making? Do you feel like it's close to where you, that would just be sufficient enough for you to not worry about client work, or like, what do you think of that?
That's a good question. Cause if I did put everything into it, if I dropped all studio work, I could really, I could, you know, upload once a week or maybe even twice a week and really enjoy the process.
Yeah.
But I really don't know if I don't know if I would want to give up studio stuff, cause I actually really enjoy working with people in studio and working on projects, and, cause that's what I'm going to be doing at some point, is running my own, if not running my own studio, running my own projects. And like I was saying, YouTube is a microcosm of that, of me learning how to delegate, learning how to handle situations and talk to people. And like, instead of just saying, just do this, it's like, all right, you did this and I'm going to show you how to tweak it. And I'll show you how to tweak it and make this editing better, so you can show another editor how to, you know, properly delegate and stuff like that. So it's all a part of the process.
I had the same feeling about, you know, Learn Squared and my work, basically, you know. It's in a similar vein. Like, I could probably do one or another or both, you know? And I'm kind of like in the realm where, as much as I enjoy running my own company and building something cool, I do enjoy working on some of other projects as well, and have that passion to art, you know? And I know a lot of creatives that have the same. And then I know a bunch of them that just enjoy the whole process of just being on their own and not on behest of any other projects, you know? So I guess it's a personality thing at the end of the day. Because you know Ross, right? Ross Tran.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for him, the goal was always it felt like I just want to be on my own and do my own stuff, you know? And he got there. So
kudos. I wanted that for a while. And even in my first few projects in the industry, I was like, screw all this, screw all these people, you know, like, I'll kill every one of you. Like, I don't care. I'll take you down in the industry and I'm going to be running this. And then after, you know, a few years of it, I was like, man, it was with the Voltron crew. I was like, man, I really like this crew. I don't want to like them. I don't want to like anybody in this crew, but I really like all of them. And I was like, man, I don't want this to end. I want to go to work every day. I don't mind doing a commute. Like, I want to spend time with these people and make art with them, because it's such a good crew.
Right.
And sorry, I'm getting a little emotional here, but I miss them, you know, and maybe someday we'll get them all back together. I mean, I'm still working with a few of them and, you know, meeting a few new people too. It's really, it's really fun. It's something I never thought I would enjoy, but I really do.
Did you work with that crew, like with the people, with the other artists?
I think it was like 2 years with Voltron. Must have been a year or 2 years. I don't know. It felt like a lifetime, you know?
Yeah. 2 years is enough to build relationships. I feel like I remember, I mean, I still, dude, Naughty Dog and the whole crew. Yeah. Like, at the end of it, when I left, I left because of Ghost in the Shell, basically. I was like, I have an opportunity of a lifetime, you know, work on the IP that I never even imagined I would be working on, and just ended up basically spearheading with Vitaly the whole, you know, art crew and
so the cool
visuals for it. It was just fucking amazing, right? But after it was done, I mean, I was thinking about maybe going back to Naughty Dog, but, you know, freelance is just like when you work from home and you work on your own dime and you're free to pick any work you like, and you don't have to wake up if you don't want to, you know.
Yeah,
it's just the freedom of it was just like, that's probably better. But I do miss the crew. I mean, I still talk with them. I still meet with them periodically. I mean, not now. Well, mm-hmm. for a while, not anymore, especially since I moved out from LA. But I still talk with the crew, and yeah, like Eitan and John and Aaron and Nick. I mean, Nick left eventually, but and Alex and all of those people are just the amount of fun you have, and because they are so like-minded, you know?
Yeah.
And the jokes and, you know, the stuff we talked about and like all that shit, just amazing times, you know? That's sort of like the relation. I look at it fondly, like, fuck yeah. I wish I was able to sort of like capture it in time and play it on repeat almost.
Yeah.
But you know, you move on, time goes on, and you just have to move on, I guess. Make new relationships.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure you'll cross paths again. That's kind of how it goes, you know, sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, as the time moves on, you know, your friends, like they become friends, and some of them like are closer. Some of them are more further apart. It just depends of like how you jive with, like, it's different when you jive with the group versus when you jive with specific people. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and people sometimes grow. I mean, I'm not saying that I grew apart from those guys, but I do have friends that I used to have, for instance, but we just grew apart, you know, like I went my way, they went their ways, you know, priorities, the life priorities. And then you realize, oh, those are good times, you know, looking forward to what's next. But yeah, as I said before, yeah. Is there something about going to familiar place? I think that's sort of like the gist of it. Like, I think the older you get, the familiarity of a place or a crew or a studio or a project makes it feel like you don't have to worry about a lot of other things.
When did you move from, you said you were from Poland, right?
Yeah.
When
did I move? I moved out from Poland 2005.
Can you tell me?
And I moved to Crytek. I was at Crytek for 5 years almost. That was Germany.
Do you mind saying your hometown in Poland?
Yeah, I lived up north near Danzig. There's like a three cities up north, like right in the center. And Gdańsk, specifically is Gdańsk, which is the bigger one. And you have two smaller ones. So I was in one of those smaller ones. That's where I grew up for the most part.
On the coast?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God.
But it's coast, it's a sea.
Yeah. You were inland a little bit.
But it's like being it's not even like Pacific Northwest. It's more like Atlantic Northeast. Kind of vibe where it's mostly like, if it's summer, it's hot as hell.
Yeah.
If it's winter, it sucks. And most of the time it's raining or it's overcast, you know?
Did you ever go to this peninsula here?
Yeah.
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 So what did you take from growing up there? What's in your art from your childhood here?
I don't know, man. I actually, you know, Alex from Naughty Dog, she made this meme that I'm a potato, which kind of stuck to me for the longest while. It's like a Polish potato, right? Because like Polish people eat potatoes all the time. So she figured that's going to be funny. And
I didn't know that.
But I feel there's something about Eastern Europeans in their blood. Like when you talk to Eastern Europeans, you can tell that they're Eastern Europeans. You know what I mean? It's like their sense of humor and like the way they talk, like how unapologetic they are for the most part. And sort of like, there's just cultural things that kind of stick to you.
Can you stereotype your own culture? I mean, I know I can stereotype mine. I'm not sure if you're comfortable with that.
I don't know. Like, I don't know if there's any like very specific thing you could pinpoint to, you know, like when people from outside of US think about Americans, they think about Texans specifically, right? Huh. For the most part, or like South, American South, right? like you know, Louisiana or
the crazy like fucking, people,
the crazy rednecks, right?
Crazy rednecks,
like that's where, like, when you think America, that's, it's either that or Hollywood. Like, it's such a it's just like, it's not even that, right? Like, when you travel through America, like, people are so different and the cultures are so different, but yet, like, that's kind of stuck to the image of like anyone in Europe. No, not everyone, but a lot
of just a potato.
Yeah, so for me, I'm just you know, like, it's kind of meme that stuck with me. There's something about the culture that is like, it's like, I guess if I would explain it to something familiar with the U.S., it's like, you know, like East Coast people, like Boston, for instance, like, they're hearty, fucking unapologetic, like, just fuck you up kind of vibe, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's similar. Similar in Eastern Europe as well, I would say.
Okay. You think that's the weather? You just get pissed off because of
the weather? You just get pissed off. Like, the weather just sucks so much, you get pissed off. And then I think culturally, because of the, you know, the Soviet Union and the communism, like, the some of the mentality, I think that that itself is dying away slowly with the generations, as the newer generations are more sort of like open-minded, I would say.
Yeah.
But still, this mentality of like, don't stick out, you know, you're never going to succeed.
Aww.
Kind of like, everything sucks, like, fucking fuck life, fuck this, fuck that. You made money, you must have stolen it, you know?
Oh my God. So,
you know what I mean?
My character is kind of like a piece of myself that is just kind of pushed to the limit. It's not to say that I completely made it up. This was a part of me and my childhood.
When you said when you said Texas, and then I remember watching your videos, it makes a lot of sense.
What do you think your character would be, though, if you had to, like, take a crazy part of yourself and just extend it past reason?
I don't know. Like, honestly,
it's like a potato maniac.
It's like a grumpy potato maniac that is just ultra competitive about everything, but then just gets lazy and then just fucking blames everyone.
That sounds like a good character. I like that.
Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of funny. I don't, like, personally, I don't look into myself enough, I guess, you know, in terms of what kind of traits that I have or what stands out in the way I behave versus what others do. I do remember being pretty rowdy with my friends at Naughty Dog, and they would have like, oh, Maché, like, oh, here he goes again.
Rowdy as in like physical?
No. Like in verbal.
Oh, okay. You'd push their buttons.
Oh, all the time. And I think what happens is that I had that get out of jail, Polish, I'm out of US. I don't understand the culture for a while.
You're so lucky.
And then I think it grew into, because I'll tell you this, like, when you move out from Europe to US, the culture shock is huge. Even though, like, okay, I lived in Germany for 5 years, right? Germany, technically one of the most progressive, one of the biggest, you know, economies in Europe. Very, very modern, like, fucking probably the best streets, the best, you know, transporting systems, all that. Like, you could just take a lot of really like first world cues from Germany, right? But yet the culture is so fucking different. Like, you wouldn't imagine. Like, you move to US and you were like, I'm in like a completely different planet almost, you know?
What do you mean, like a respect level or just
people different. Just different, like not in a bad or a good way, just different, you know? There's good and bad that comes with it, you know? There's a reason I fell in love being in here, honestly, and I feel like this is my home right now, United States, although I do get homesick every now and then. But the culture is way different. It's just like small, it's not like a major thing, small things for the most part. But I think the main part that makes Americans different than Europeans is the approach to individuality. I would say that's the best explanation.
How so?
So if you're here, let's say you're here and you say, I want to be a film director or I want to start a company, right? There's, for the most part, not everyone, but most, right? On average, most people will say, good for you, or I don't give a fuck, right? Those are like the two main answers you're going to get. And then you're going to have a fraction of populations like, why? Like, you're too stupid, you know? Versus from my experiences being in Europe back when I was there, it would be the other way around. Like, most people would say, like, why the fuck you're doing this? You're not never going to succeed, versus like, go for it or I don't care. So that was a big one. I think that's the biggest, where it's, and I think it has a lot to do with the history and cultures, you know?
Really screw you up as a kid? I mean, like, did that really affect how you perceived yourself and how you're doing art and stuff?
I don't know. I guess it depends on what kind of character you are, you know, like what kind of character traits you have in your DNA. Yeah. You know, there are some people that just fall into the go with the motions and.
Oh, become, so you're a nature versus nurture.
Yeah. Like, you know, some people, like when you grow up in a certain environment, you take a lot of cues from that environment. You kind of conform to you become an average of who you, of people you surround yourself with. Right.
Yeah.
That's what they say. You know, the five people you surround yourself with, you're an average of that. Basically you become an average of that. So like, therefore surround yourself with successful people and then you're going to be successful. Like, it sounds easy on paper, but anyways. But there is some truth to it, right? So when you grow up with everyone complaining, then you start complaining, basically, right? And then when you grow up with everyone saying that you're never going to succeed because, like, why would you just do your job and shut the fuck up, then you kind of, like, take that because it's the easiest way to do it, right? But I was always like, fuck this shit. Like, I don't want to be poor. I don't want to do that. I want to do the shit I like, you know?
And you felt like that was something... You felt like that was something you were born with, or did a parent or a friend give that? Was there somebody within your five friend circle, influence
Hard
circle?
That- I don't remember anymore. Oh, I think it was just me for the most part. I mean, when I was growing up like really fucking poor, like poor, like Appalachian fucking poor, you know, like Appalachian belt, you know, that what was it called? Like, just really, really poor. And so my options were, I just going to do what I think will get me out of this shit, or I'll just be poor and fucking be poor.
Do you have people asking you for money now?
No, I ignored them.
Okay.
Yeah. I've never had any, actually, no, I don't think I've ever had anyone asking me for money. I would usually, I don't know. It's a difficult subject, right? Like, when you have friends you grew up with and they ask you for money, it's like, what are you going to do? But then it's a judgment call, I guess.
It's,
you know?
It's definitely different culturally, because for me, like, I don't think I was family situation.
Well,
for
family
me was
is
a bit different.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of what I mean. But like, for me, I don't think I would give anybody any money unless they're extremely close. But I know for my fiance, she's Filipino, and family is an extremely, like, super important thing. And at first I was like, this, I don't understand this. I don't know it. But now, like, I've spent more time with her and her family. It's such a, I can see the importance of it. And before I'd have been like, don't give anybody any money. But now it's like, oh man, that it's just so different. The cultures are completely different, you know?
Yeah. With family, it's different. Like, I think family is the most important thing you'll ever have, especially if you have a good relationship. Because sometimes people, you know, sometimes families are horrible. You know, you want to you want to stay away as far as you can. And it's the same with friends. Like, if you know you have real friends, and I'm saying real friends, not just like colleagues or someone who is there only if you're successful. I'm saying like real friends that they'll just live or die for you. You know, then it's a different thing too. You would do a lot for a real friend versus a fake friend. It's kind of interesting. I was talking with Ash about this. In my culture, where I grew up, a friend means someone who will do everything for you because they love you as a person. And then everyone else is just a colleague. Versus like wow. friend in America is just like, it's a colleague, basically. It's a person, you know, like, I know that guy. He's my friend, you know?
Yeah.
But he's
really, kind of like, rare.
Yeah.
It's kind of rare I've seen to find people. Luckily, I have like three or four that I grew up with essentially. Mm-hmm. And they're, yeah, those are like extremely tight-knit friends as opposed to like colleagues.
Yeah. 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 Do you have like in your circles people you've knew for like a long time that you consider like real friends?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And I didn't realize until after I got out of, you know, or after I left Texas and kind of I wasn't so close to them physically mm-hmm. that a lot of people don't actually have that. A lot of people don't have those relationships.
Yeah.
And it's something that I thought everybody had, but it seems kind of rare.
Yeah, you can tell if someone's your real friend when you move out and you still spend as much time with them as if you were there, like online or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. It's true. Yeah, friendships are rare, but they're important. Yeah, I don't know. Money. Yeah. I've heard people, I think I had people asking me for money once or twice, but those were not friends. Those were like non-friend relationships. I was like, fuck no, like why would I do that?
You know? Wait, so are you saying you won't give me any money right now?
I don't know what do I get in what do I get in exchange, you know?
If you give me money, I'll give you money.
We could do exchange like that.
Okay? Yeah,
just exchange dollar bills.
I'm looking around your hometown, or I mean, I don't know if it's your hometown, but it's somewhere near you where you grew up. There's like a lot of old school looking streets, like cobblestone streets. It looks really cool.
Yeah. So Gdańsk, for instance, is one of the oldest, well, not one of the oldest cities in Europe, or maybe it is. It's been there for like 1,000 years.
Yeah. It looks so pretty freaking old. It's one of the oldest
cities. Yeah.
Can you tell me like all the illegal things that you used to do? I mean, did you ever do anything illegal when you were a kid, you know, get into trouble? I mean, you must have been bored, right?
I got into trouble with like police a couple of times, but that was nothing like super serious. Like I was actually lucky because like no one in my family was ever involved in like criminal activities. And I was always like taught to stay away from that shit. And I remember growing up and being mugged a couple of times. I was fuck, this is scary.
Dude. What was the very first time? How old were you?
I was in my teenage. Yeah, I was a teenager when it happened the first time. And then when I was on my first year of university, last year of high school, I was mugged. And then the first year of university. And in all of those situations, I was super lucky not to get hurt.
Did they have a knife or they just their hands?
One time it was a guy with a hammer in the bag. Like he would just have like a plastic bag to hide that there's a hammer, but you could tell it's a hammer. So like, oh, that can fuck me up. The other time was a group of like hooligans, you know, the football team hooligans. And yeah, in all those situations, I was lucky because like, A, I was poor as shit, so I didn't have any money anyways.
And, what did you do? Did you like have a wallet or did you just drop your britches? No,
the hooligans one, I was just texting my friend on like those old Nokia phones. Remember those like brick ones you could throw on the wall and it would still work? And
you threw that at him?
No, I was like, they just wanted to take it away. But I was lucky because the police, I was actually like rolling in. There was a police car. And so they saw it, like, okay, leave that guy alone. And I fucking jetted.
Wow.
So that was lucky. And then the other time it was a guy with the hammer and like fucking give me all the money. I had like fucking less than a dollar in my hands. Like, what Ooh. The fuck is this? I don't want this, you know?
I bet you he felt real silly.
Oh, I don't know. He was just like pissed because he could, I mean, he didn't even want that. He thought I have like money or something. And how stupid. I was like, I was at the university walking with my friend in fucking rags. I looked like shit and like students with money. Are you fucking drunk?
Is there anything that you would do different after you got mugged?
I don't think about it. Honestly.
No. Oh, okay.
I mean, it was like middle of the day. It wasn't like, in a sketchy neighborhood or a sketchy situation. It was just like, if it happens, it happens. You have no control over it, you know? Weird. It's different now. I feel like it's different now. I feel like most of the towns in Poland are way safer than most of the towns in US these days, you know?
Mm. Why didn't you just shoot those guys with guns?
Oh, you don't have guns there, dude.
Okay.
Yeah, I can see that smirk.
Weird. That's pretty weird, weird. Man. I gotta say, your culture weird. Is pretty strange.
Yeah, yeah.
Were you a woods kind of person? You go out in the woods?
No.
I grew up in cities. Childhood. Oh, okay.
You grew up in the woods?
Pretty much, yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
So was moving to LA like a big culture shock?
Yeah, I mean, I thought, like, I would go camping for most of my life, you know, living off the land. And so I thought, well, I'll just go to California and I'll go to school with the small amount of money that I have and I'll just sleep in the woods. And I get out here and it's a bunch of freaking private property and cactus and desert. There's no, you can't sleep. I mean, I did sleep in, what do you call them? The parks that they have around here, that's national forests situation. But, I mean, yeah, I thought, you know, I'd come out here and find a stream, follow the stream to the lake where you have a bunch of deer and groundhogs, all kinds of birds. And I would just go out there, you know, with my rock or a sling, and I would just sling them and I'd tie them up and, you know, gut them and have myself a fire, because it's not private. But
that's
property.
How you grew up, like for reals, where you would be.
I mean, just replace the sling with a gun.
Yeah.
Pretty much, yeah.
Was there hunting in your family at all?
Oh yeah, there's a lot of hunting. Yeah, a lot of killing.
A lot of killing. Yeah, a lot of murdering innocent animals.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good stuff.
I never grew up in the, I mean, I grew up mostly in the cities, which always kind of made me cling to the cities. But like these days, I'm like, I want to kind of stay away from cities personally. I feel like way more connected to the idea of having more land, more space, less traffic, less stress, cheaper life, you know, better quality, and then spending your time in the nature. There's just so much beautiful shit. And like, even in California, there's just so much.
For sure. Yeah. California
outside of cities.
Yeah. California is beautiful. Absolutely.
Yeah. I remember going to Yosemite for the first time. I was like, what the fuck is going on here? Yeah, I've never seen anything like that, you know?
Have you traveled much? Where have you been?
I don't travel much at all. Like, usually travel kind of relates to where do I feel comfortable going that doesn't require me to spend a lot of money and a lot of effort.
Yeah.
If I can avoid, because I don't like travel per se. Like, getting to a destination just always sucks for me. I hate it. Mm. But then being at the destination and enjoying it, it's a different thing, you know? And I usually piggy myself into a corner of overworking myself all the time. So then I have an excuse, like, I'm working so hard that I don't have time to go to travel.
So you feel like the way you were raised and kind of being poor, does that affect how you think now about, you know, money and all the stuff that you do?
Yeah, it does. How does it affect you? Because, like, I would tell, for me, it's... I went through swings of worrying about it and then accepting that whatever happens, then happens. And because I used to live on the borderline poverty and I know I can survive doing that, I feel like if I lose it all, I can still live, you know?
Right.
It's a little different because I have a kid now. And so obviously I'll never let that happen, because why would I ruin my kid's life? You know?
Yeah.
But generally speaking, it's like, if you can unburden yourself from worrying about money, then your life becomes better. But then you have to be you know, it comes with the price of you have to be on top of it as well and really pay attention where your money is going, you know?
Yeah, there's problems at every level of life, I would agree. Every, like, state that you're in.
Yeah. How does it for you? Like, do you worry about money at all? Because I think this freelance, do you work full-time? Do you work freelance? Like, what's your current situation? Or, like, what's your situation past few years?
It's mostly I'm working freelance, full-time. Right? Well, it's, like, from home full-time, you know, because right. of the pandemic. But it's
before full-time. Pandemic, you would go to the studio all the time?
Yep. Yeah, okay. And that was me trying, kind of figuring out, you know, that I really enjoyed working with people for the first time. Mm-hmm. But I grew up, I wouldn't quite say completely dirt poor, you know, but I grew up, my family didn't have, we would like pass down vehicles in the family. And I was lucky right. enough to get one of those vehicles. So it's that type of, you could say middle class or whatever, but they definitely didn't have enough money to pay for college or anything like that, so
right.
I kind of had to find, but that's definitely affected how, like, at DreamWorks they'd give out free food and
like I'm hell sold. Yeah
yeah free so that's free breakfast and it was free lunch, and I would pack the lunch and then I would double pack on top of that a dinner,
you get a
so
dinner.
For yeah for like for 3 years or so, I mean, I would have free food essentially all. And then on Fridays, you know, I'd like triple pack, you know, quadruple pack, and just get like breakfast for the next morning and lunch and dinner for the next morning or for the whole weekend.
Sweet. That's a good deal.
And that's how
saving on food.
That's how I fell in love with my fiance, because she's also does the same thing. And I saw her in the lunch line and I was like, hey, you're stealing food too? And she's like, yeah. And we're like, oh, I guess we have to get together now. We
allegedly, don't really like, by the way.
Yeah, we don't like each other. We don't really love each other, but we do like to save money. So that's kind of something that,
that's you know, what connects you guys.
Yeah, it's pretty great. But
that's funny.
Yeah, man, that free food. Like, they were taking it out of our paychecks, essentially. But I could get coffee at any point in the day, so I was fine. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, if you can save on food, that's great.
Absolutely.
So you always like had a frugal mind of like, where can I
for sure. I was raised that way, but it even became so bad at one point that I was raised by my grandparents, but my grandpa was like, can I like buy you a flipping ice cream right now? And I was like, no, we should just save the money. And he's like, let me buy you an ice cream. And I'm like, just give me the money instead. I'll get you a cheaper ice cream and I'll keep the rest. But,
it's funny.
Yeah, it was mainly in how I was raised. It's a good thing, but it can be a bad thing sometimes, you know, but I'll tell you what, if I do work for DreamWorks again, or I will work for DreamWorks again when I have kids, because then I'm just going to invite them to lunch every day and I'll tell them to bring like Tupperware, you know.
They're going to learn how to get free food.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if they want to eat, they're going to have to work for it, you know.
It'll be the rite of passage. Son,
right.
This is how I did it. This is how my dad did it. This is how my grandparents.
Yeah.
You have to continue the lineage.
It's rough. It's really rough. And maybe we can even pack some more and sell it on the streets or something, you know.
Do you still go camping, by the way? Do you still like kind of want to get away from the city?
I want to. But really the only person that would do the type of camping that I enjoy is one of my old friends, and we don't live, you know, close to each other anymore.
Can zoom. You can just go to the woods, and then he goes to the woods, and then you fucking zoom.
I guess so. Yeah, I've never thought that's such a
social distancing in progress.
Yeah, but yeah, I guess you got to be with the right people sometimes, you know. Because there's camping and there's glamping, which is like glamorous camping where you just chill and you drink a beer, and which is okay, you know. That's always fun. But I prefer kind of getting kind of getting stuck in stupid situations, you know, difficult situations, and right. camping is always good.
Like fighting with bears and hunting deer.
Yeah. Eating raw what have meat. You. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I try to get away from the city as much as I can these days. Actually, you know, I found sort of like this secondary passion in mountain biking recently. And it's probably the best thing for the soul, I would say, right now.
Yeah.
It changes perspective a lot. My daughter likes biking too, so that's always like makes it easier because I can, apart from just going myself with my friends to you know, on the trails, I can take my daughter as well on like a easy stuff, and then we can have like a good family time. Yeah. And just being outside a city where you have a lot of trails and a lot of like places to go to, it's always awesome. And you know, you discover like how much good stuff is out there without, like, you know, once you sort of disconnect yourself from a phone and like you know, the buzz of working with clients and phone calls and all that shit, just yeah, it's like a good
it's like getaway. A reset.
Yeah, it's a good reset. Go ahead.
What do you hate most about me and my content, and what would you change?
I don't like hating. I don't
it's
like
okay.
the idea of it.
It's okay.
No. I'm being honest. Like, I hate when people hate, actually. I feel like, you know, the thing is, well, okay, let's, I mean, we talked about it in the beginning. When I saw your, like, I saw a title and like shit, a lot of views, like, okay, this guy is either trolling or he's like a hater, you know, I'm going to watch it. And I watched it. I was like, it's not a clickbait, but then you're really sarcastic. Like but then also like smart about how you go about it, you know? And it's very rare. Like you know, there's different types of content out there when you watch videos, right? There's like a really cookie cutter, you know, I'll show you how to draw this and that, right?
Step one, step two, step three.
But you're like, you have this bravose sort of like true American funny kind of like quote unquote asshole approach to everything. And I just find it hilarious, you know? And, you know, I'm honestly, I watched the, you mentioned Inktober. I watched it just because it was funny. Like, there was a comedic aspect to it that I really enjoy. But honestly, I do not care about like the TMZ angle of it. That's just my personal thing. Like, to me, all of that is such a noise to like not really pay attention to. Like, yeah. People are just coming up with shit just to cause drama. And it's like, is that even important? You know, like, none of it makes any sense. And you made like some really good points. Like, hey, you guys kind of fucking copying from each other and from others anyway. So like, who fucking cares, you know? So that was funny. But, you know, the video I watched about Lois was super funny. Cause like, it sounds like you're an asshole, but you really aren't. Like, you're like actually pointing out, like, you know, I don't know. Like, to me, it felt, there's an edgy is a very edgy word, by the way. but there's an aspect of it that I just find funny. I like comedy in general, you know? And I think what makes your videos entertaining is that you have a very comedic approach to it, basically, you know? Like, Ross, for instance, has very entertaining. Like, he's a great entertainer. When you watch his video, he's like a very kind of Disney-esque approach to it, but it's like super entertaining. And he's funny, but in a different way. You know? He's like clean funny. And you're like a comedian.
You don't think I'm clean? You don't think I'm clean?
You're dirty, dude.
Oh my God.
Nah, joking. But I don't like you asked if I, what do I hate? I don't hate. I don't like hating. Hate is usually, to me, it's like, if you're hating, that means you're having issues with your own work or of your own self-worth, in my opinion. Like, hate usually means that you're unhappy with yourself and you don't like that someone has something else to say. And to me personally, I don't know, Like if someone has a different opinion, I don't care, you know, honestly.
Yeah.
I respect it. I'm not going to be like going on Twitter and causing wars. I actually deleted Twitter because of it. It's just like, I barely ever followed anyone, and all that I see was some art and then people arguing. It's like, fuck this, you know,
yeah.
Such a waste of time.
I love it. I love it so much because it's a tool. It's a tool for manipulation. It like, it's easy to not like it and to be put off by it, but it's just a reflection of like what people enjoy. They enjoy drama. And
yeah.
How can we use that in our media and creativity to kind of manipulate them to watch something and to maybe even change them for the better? And I love it. Like any weird thing that people gravitate towards, I love it so much. It's very telling. And it's like, all right, give me more. Show me what else I can manipulate.
I can tell you're enjoying it. I can definitely tell you're like just having a heck out of it. It's like, fuck, that shit's hilarious. I'm just going to mock you.
It's pretty fun. Yeah.
Yeah. This is why I like South Park too. You know, it's just pointing out, I think what you do well is pointing out hypocrisy for sure. And I enjoy that. I enjoy like when someone's just putting up their egos and like, I'm this fucking, I don't know who. And then like, you clearly know that they're full of shit, you know?
Do you think I can be hypocritical in some ways?
I don't, I mean, honestly, I haven't watched everything you've done, right? Like, let's just be clear. No, why would I? Like, I don't have time for this shit, dude. but from what I watched, you know, this is what I can tell. And I don't know, like I would have to watch all of your videos and get to know you a little more to know if you're hypocritical or not. It's like, you can sound hypocritical, but you might as well. Who fucking knows, you know? Maybe someone who knows you better, like, yeah, that guy is a fucking absolutely hypocrite. And then, but who knows? What drew me into like asking you to do the podcast was that aspect of like, it's original. What you do is very original. There is, you know, especially in art. Because not many people have that angle to it, you know? So
actually, that's like you were talking about before. You said that nothing we really create is original these days for the most part. And it really is just me taking something else from another genre and then sticking it onto art. Because this personality, this stupid thing that I do, it exists. It's just not within our niche. And so that's like, I was like, oh, that's a market, you know? I can do that. And everything else kind of, it seems to work that way within, you know, Netflix and Hulu and all these shows that are coming out in YouTube, all these different projects. It's all just taking something that already exists and putting it into a different market that would enjoy
your
those.
Own.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't want you to think that I'm like a genius because you keep saying, oh, Ethan, you're a genius and you're smart and you're like awesome.
There's no way you're a genius. No, I would
yeah.
Not say
well,
that.
You don't have to be modest, but you know, it's like I didn't invent this. Like I don't care how much you say that I am a genius. I didn't invent it. Sorry.
I didn't say you invented it. I said you had original angle to the whole art genre, which means it is original because like I'm pretty sure you can find people doing that, but there are not that many. So in that essence, it's original, you know, you have your own approach and I enjoyed that. And there's nothing wrong with enjoying something. I'm not saying you're a fucking Caravaggio for God's sake. You know,
you don't have to say that. It's okay. You don't have to say that.
I wouldn't say it. But it's, you know, that's just me. And I think that's something I've learned over past decade is that there is much more power in appreciating something that is genuinely good, in my opinion, than just hating, you know, like hating gets you nowhere.
Yeah.
It's like, who had that quote? Someone said about critics, like the film critics. There's no statues risen to film critics, you know?
Oh, but yeah, that's interesting.
You know what I mean? It's like you can be a critic of something, but you're not producing anything really. Like You're just criticizing. That's what you're doing. Versus people who actually go out and do something and fail, and maybe the movie you're watching is not the greatest, but at least that person made an effort to actually make that movie happen. Yeah. You know,
I really like that quote. A statue has never been risen to critics.
Yeah, I can't remember who said that.
I don't like that. I'm glad I thought of it.
It's a good one. It's a good one. So yeah, and it's you know, when you read comments under someone else's work, it's like, oh, I fucking hate this shit, or this looks like this, and this is, it's like,
typically the people that I find doing that are people who are teenagers and just kind of coming out of that phase in their life, like mid-20s, and then typically it starts to die off. But that's like a huge high school thing, is to be like, oh, blah, blah, blah. Like, I've seen this before. And I was like that too. I completely understand. Like, the same thing.
There's some older people doing that too in their 30s.
Oh, yeah.
Surprised. Yeah. And, well, you know, the funny part is, like, you look at the comments, like, I don't think you've executed this right. Like, I would change lighting and whatever. It doesn't look like realistic. And then you, okay, let's see if you're like expert in this. And you click and you see, what the fuck?
It's really easy. Yeah. It's really easy to throw out things of like what you would change, but not necessarily how you would change it, because you don't know how. And that's and it goes for relationships too. Like, I find myself doing the same thing to my fiance. Like, don't do this. Like, why are you doing this thing? And then she's like, okay, I won't, but what's the alternative? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, I guess there is no alternative. And then once you sit down and think about it, you're like, oh, I guess it makes sense why you do that now. It's just people who do that haven't thought so far in a certain process to actually use empathy to like put themselves in their shoes and be like, what would I do differently? You know, like, you don't know because you haven't thought of it.
It's easier to say than actually suggest or make it yourself, you know? Mm-hmm. Talk is cheap, they say.
Talk is very cheap.
Yeah. But then,
or like I said, that there are no statues erected to critics, just like what I had said.
Yeah. 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 Easy to criticize. That's why I said, like, I try to not pay attention to any of this, you know? Yeah. And then when you said, like, oh, people, whatever, did you read comments or what people say? Is like, I don't need to. I'm pretty sure people fucking hate the shit you do.
Yeah.
As there's, you know, you're not doing a cookie cutter shit. You're doing a, you know, it on the surface looks divisive. So, I can only expect, but I don't care. You know, I have my own opinion about it. I don't need to validate my opinion by reading other people's comments, you know?
How do people react to the, like, was this, this podcast, I know for artists, it probably didn't really help them artistically at all, but I really enjoy that it's a conversation. Do you feel like you need to cater to an audience or with this podcast? You just do what you want and just have a conversation?
I do it for myself.
That's awesome.
And then the result of it is that I do get a lot of comments of people saying that this is great, but they really enjoy it, you know?
Yeah.
And there are comments where, like, I wish there was painting, I wish there was that, I wish there was demos, but that's not really what it is, you know?
Yeah.
And I said I read comments, and then I would probably never learn how to not interrupt people if I wasn't reading comments, or I wouldn't learn how to, you know, talk and get the conversation going if I wasn't, like, re-listening to some of the episodes and really, like, examining, like, how do I actually approach and talk with people, and if there's any, like, funny angles I could have had, maybe entertaining. But I don't like being unnatural, you know? I like to be myself in those situations, and I would not want to do a podcast if it wasn't that. Like, if it was supposed to be something that I catered towards something, it just becomes work. And since it's a small thing, like, my podcast is not, I mean, it's almost 50,000. You could argue it's a lot of people following it, right? But it's not Joe Rogan or, you know, or any of those bigger podcasts where they monetize it to hell and make a lot of money doing that. if that was the case, then, but once you reach that, I don't think, I mean, you reach that point by just being genuine in the first place. So why would you change that all of a sudden because you're making money, you know? I guess that's sort of like the way I think about it.
Did you think that when you were going to have me on this podcast, did you think I was going to be my character, or did you?
Nah,
no,
I didn't know. Okay. So I like to know for the most part, who am I inviting to? The beauty of recording instead of going live is that if it turns out that person is like, oh my God, I cannot have that conversation online, then we just scrap it, you know? Okay. But I would say 99.9% of the time, it just turns out to be just a conversation. And the beauty of it is just like, as you talk and you don't have an agenda, you kind of learn what the person is, who the person is, you know? And you get like, some people just act. Some people are very genuine. You know, unless you talk more, then you're never going to know for sure. But yeah, I don't know. That's how I approach it. So.
Okay. So you didn't want me to be like a complete American asshole. Cause like,
I don't care.
I mean, was honestly. I? Is I?
I feel like it's a normal conversation, right?
All right.
You know,
maybe I should work on my act more.
maybe, who knows? I don't know. I don't know. How are you in reality? I feel like I'm talking to you rather than the act, right?
I don't know. So, which one's which? That's the question.
Cause like, you don't act like you act in your videos. So that's what I would assume, you know, I'm not the smartest person either. So maybe I'm assuming wrong. So, but I'm willing to admit that. But yeah, I never have expectations. The only expectation I have is that there are certain topics I just don't want to talk about. And eventually some conversations go into, which is politics, but I try to avoid it as fire because it's just too divisive, you know?
Yeah.
It's nothing, and it's just not what this channel is about, so.
Do you enjoy animation? Have you worked in animation?
Yeah, starting. I mean, I did my animation. Like,
yeah.
Some people say it's not really an animation, but I argue it is, you know?
It is.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't care. But yeah, and then I did my directorial debut this year in animation as well. I did like a pretty big project shortly after, which went pretty great. And we'll see where it goes. You know, I do enjoy animation. I always hated animation. Like I didn't, well, not hate it. I never found animation to be enjoyable apart from niches like Ghost in the Shell, Akira, you know, Ninja Scroll, Ghibli movies, you know, some of the very specific Disney films like Lion King and, you know, that have very like distinct feel to it and they're like masterfully done. I think that just the threshold for what I enjoy is so high. Like it has to be an absolute masterpiece for me to enjoy it versus watching like even, as much as I enjoyed watching Kung Fu Panda, to me, it wasn't a masterpiece. It wasn't like what the Lion King was back in the days or what Ghibli movies were.
Yeah,
you know?
It's not. It's popcorn.
Yeah, so when you watch that, it's like, I don't think I would enjoy doing that personally, you know? So I never looked at animation through that lens. And also the tools back in the days were, the pipeline of creating animation back in the days was way more difficult unless you would draw frame by frame versus what you can do now.
Yeah.
And having a full control over what you do is usually, you know, okay, if I can control the level of quality I'm after, then I can only be upset about if it doesn't work well, then the only person I can be upset about is me. And then I'll be my own self disappointment, you know, versus like I wasted my time for the shit that I wasn't even caring about, you know? So
yeah.
How about you? Do you enjoy animation? How is animation connects to VizDev in your situation?
And I love your stuff so much. Well, Was this 3D smoke that you did? In the short? Oh, damn, man, it looks so cool.
It's a mix. But yeah, well, 3D, a little bit 2D, After Effects.
VizDev for animation, you know, it's like, instead of doing the frame by frame, flipping through an animation scene or something, you just paint the shot, you know, of how it would look.
But do you dabble in animation as well? Like, not necessarily.
You mean like the actual act of animating?
Yeah.
Oh, I do storyboards, so I don't do the in-betweens. Essentially, I just do the major poses. But sometimes for like a fight scene, you know, I'll actually, if I want them to move a specific way of like grabbing a hand and flipping around or doing whatever, I'll actually draw those out. So yeah, it's like a step away. I mean, that's the stuff I learned on Voltron, was they're doing a step away from animating. The whole animatic was, it moved like an animation.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that's what
I've seen that happen before. I think it was a bunch of films that the animator, the storyboard artist would do sort of like, almost like the storyboard would have like music and moving layers and that kind of stuff.
That's how I learned to do it. And then there's other people that own like different, maybe like Pixar projects or something, where it's not that at all. It's very simple character in the middle of the shot, very simple circles, just a story. It's literally storyboarding. Right. It's like story first. But for me, it's like a whole, can you hear this awesome noise in the background?
No.
Okay, sick. But it's a step away from animating, and I honestly love it because I can present a project in just a storyboard. Like I can do a trailer and I can put music to it, and you can get a vibe of what something is, as opposed to just one still image where you're like, I think I can see what this project is. But with the storyboard, you know, it doesn't even have to be full animation. You can be like, I get it. I really get it. That would be fun to have like a production company just for pitches, you know?
There's a bunch of them out there. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I know a few people that, I mean, I scrape my elbows with a few people that I forgot the names of that do that kind of stuff, where they basically, all they do is like creating a pitching packets and sell it to Netflix and other companies, you know? Nice. But yeah, I mean, even for my short, you know, I did start with storyboards. I cannot imagine doing any of that without, you know, going through that process of locking down shots and making sure that everything is set and before you start producing, you know?
So did you release those boards?
No, it just looks so shitty. It was just like scribbles.
Oh, that would be really
I don't
cool
care about
see.
Releasing any of that. You know, the way really I approach cool. the way I approached the short was, first I did like a rip-o-matic, like almost like a rip-o-matic, where you take visuals from other films and anime just to get and put it with the music, just to see how edit works and the vibe and if it's all gelling, and gives you an idea. But the problem with that is that you have to have an idea what are you going to do in the first place. If you're just putting images together, then you're just going to be on behest of like just doing what those images are telling you, versus if you're putting images together because you know they are going to follow a specific storyboard that you have in mind, you know?
Right.
That's a major difference. A lot of companies do that too. Like even in video games, when they would do a trailer for a game, they would put together like visuals from other movies and games just to sort of like sell the idea what the trailer could be, and then build, you know, storyboards and scenes and assets specifically to match the vibe, but not necessarily the look, you know?
Yeah. So, I can totally see that.
But you mentioned you want to do like eventually run a studio like that, right? Where you...
Running a studio, I think, would be a lot of effort. What I would probably enjoy more eventually down the line is, you know, being a showrunner or, just trying to run the overall direction of the story and then, right. you know, having a team with directors and definitely art directors and stuff. I don't want to have to deal with that as much, but story.
Big goal. Mainly.
Yeah. I don't, well, I mean, it is, but at the same time, it's not really that far-fetched. As long as I have a good team, like I have to have a good team. I don't, ironically, I don't really care too much about the visuals. Like I want it to look good, but I don't really care too much about the environment and stuff like that anymore, because that's just so often, it sucks to see, but so often these days we have so much beautiful visuals and amazing stuff like that, that the story just, there's no story. And like I'm, for the past few years, I've been solely focused on story and writing and trying to figure out, you know, what makes things tick. And I've been diving into that.
Yeah, story is so lately. Important. Without story, it's all...
Yeah, it just falls apart.
Whack.
Yeah. So that's what I've been doing.
Yeah. Good. I mean, it's a big plan. Hopefully it's going to work out. So who knows? Who knows? Dude, we've been chatting for quite a substantial amount of time, I'd say.
I've enjoyed it. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, there's so many topics we could go back and forth, and I kind of do enjoy the fact that I was interviewed this time around. It's all good. I don't mind any of that. It's how it sometimes conversation flows, right?
Yeah.
So all that matters. But yeah, I got other plans. I gotta get back to all the other shit that I've had planned, and I'm pretty sure you're a busy man too.
Absolutely. I enjoyed every second of it though.
Yeah, it was fun. And I'm pretty sure we could go back and do one more sometime in the future. But it was fun connecting and then getting to know you, getting to know the real Ethan. Ethan, is that do I spell it correctly?
Yeah, you said it correctly. Some people say it different, but yeah.
Yeah, Ethan and Eitan, that's like two different Eitan. Names.
Yeah. Eitan, have been called Eaton.
So where can people find you? I mean, most of the people who are going to watch this already know, but you know,
if
someone's like, who is this handsome human Texan being?
Oh, shoot. YouTube, #YouTube, just type in art and I'll be the first one that pops up.
Okay.
That's pretty much it. Yeah.
I have to test this in incognito mode from like fucking local cafe. See what's up.
Yeah, man, that's how most people find me. Other than that, you know, DreamWorks lunch line, you know, I'll be there. Hired or not. Yeah.
Hired or not. Good. I'll link all the social stuff below anyway. So dude, fun times. Really enjoyed the conversation. And it was fun. It was fun. Thanks for coming on.
Absolutely.
Cool.
Yeah. All right. I wanna stay on for a little bit longer just to say something off camera, but thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. Let's wrap it up here. Thanks, everyone. Cheers.
Bye-bye.